This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. What would a Democratic win for the office of North Carolina Treasurer look like in 2020? That's a question our next guest is hoping to answer on Election Day this November. I'm here with Democratic contender Ronnie Chatterjee, first-time candidate for state office, also a professor at Duke's Fuqua School of Business and the Sanford School of Public Policy. Ronnie is facing off with incumbent state treasurer Dale Falwell, who we spoke with last week. You can hear a link to that conversation or find a link to that conversation at our website, stateofthings.org, and we'll have a link to this one as well when we finish. Ronnie, welcome.
Thank you, Frank. Great to be here.
Nice to have you. You know, last week we spoke with your opponent, the current treasurer, Dale Falwell, about his role as state treasurer, or how he saw it. How do you perceive the roles and responsibilities of state treasurer?
Well, first of all, I think people are looking for something different in the Department of State Treasurer. I'm a nerd, not a politician. I've never run for office before, and this is my first time on the statewide ballot. The state treasurer has three key responsibilities. You manage the $100 billion pension fund, that's billion with a B, our 720,000 member state health plan, and make all the infrastructure investments through bond financing in North Carolina. My folks were state employees where I grew up, so their role in terms of having a pension and a health plan they could depend on was a big part of the reason I was able to grow up and get my own education. So it's really important that we get the right people in these jobs in North Carolina.
Well, as a self-described nerd, what made you decide to run for public office?
Well, you know, I never really thought that I would do this. It started off when a man named Barack Obama spoke on stage at the Democratic National Convention, and he said that a skinny kid with a funny name could do anything in this country. And for the first time, I felt like a politician was talking to me, and I almost thought he was talking about me. And so I decided to get involved in his campaign here in North Carolina and eventually became his economic advisor at the White House. It was that experience that just transformed me into both thinking that I could do something like this and wanted to get more involved in North Carolina. Since then, I've gotten a lot more involved working with Governor Cooper's administration and, of course, dating back to the beginning of this race in May 2019, entered the primary and won it on March 3rd with 410,000 votes across the state.
Well, as you said, you were a senior economist at the White House Council of Economic Advisors. What did you learn in that role?
You know, we came in on the heels of the greatest downturn since the Great Depression. Now, obviously, I could have never anticipated what would happen with COVID-19 later in my life. But at that point, we were trying to do everything we could to get the economy back on track. And there are three things I think that really came out for me. One is nobody has all the answers. There were so many things that happened in the aftermath of the last financial crisis that we hadn't anticipated and we hadn't planned for, and we need to come up with new models to rescue the economy. Second was that small business was really hit hard by the financial crisis, similar to what we're seeing now with COVID-19, and we need to prioritize small business in any recovery effort. And the third, which is another theme today, state and local government. We made huge cuts in North Carolina to our state and local government funding in the aftermath of the Great Recession. And that's one of the reasons it took so long to come back from the Great Recession. I hope we don't make those same mistakes again 2021.
Well, if, for instance, you're in favor of Medicaid expansion, now how would you ensure that health care coverage reaches the greatest number of North Carolinians and that we can actually afford to expand Medicaid?
Well, you know, I was in favor of Medicaid expansion, you know, way back in 2010, and then after the Supreme Court decision, and now that 38 states and the District of Columbia have all initiated Medicaid expansion, I'm still in favor of it. I think it's the right thing economically for North Carolina from health perspective, particularly during a pandemic. And it's just the moral thing to do. I think that we can certainly afford Medicaid expansion if those other states have done the same thing. In fact, our federal tax dollars that we send to Washington are being used to fund some of those expansions. The federal government will pick up their share, as they have with every other state, and they've kept their end of the bargain. And I think we should take that deal in North Carolina. I don't want us to be 39th in anything in our state. I always like to be first, but with Medicaid expansion, we need to do it now. And I'm hoping after this election, it'll get done with myself as state treasurer.
Well, you may need to do it now, but you'd also have to do it well. And you'd be responsible, I think, for managing that program. And again, there are a lot of dollars that get spent. Although, as you said, we've left billions and billions of federal dollars on the table that did not get spent into our communities. But also, it is public tax dollars that get used. How do you manage that? And how do you make sure it doesn't get out of control?
My biggest priority with healthcare is to align the billions we pay with actual healthcare outcomes. For a long time, the discussion on the state health plan has been about reinforcing that fee-for-service model, you know, paying for an MRI, paying for tests. And we're not necessarily paying in that case for what comes after and the value of the healthcare you get and whether you're healthy, you're paying for the test. What I want to do with all these programs, including the state health plan, which I would directly oversee, is make sure that the $3.3 billion we pay is aligned with actual healthcare outcomes. If we hold providers and health systems accountable for the outcomes of patients, we're going to save money, but more importantly, we're going to have a healthier population. That's already being done in the Medicare program in North Carolina. Companies like Blue Cross Blue Shield are already doing that through their Blue Premier program, and many health systems across the state are already getting paid that way. The state health plan is the part that's left out. I want to give our state employees the same good payment structure that we have for these other entities in the state.
Yeah, but holding them accountable is the key to this, and you talked about the state health, medical systems, hospital systems that you would have to hold accountable, providers that you'd hold accountable. I mean, let's take a look at the clear pricing project that the incumbent treasurer and your opponent, Dale Falwell, introduced an alternative, called it the Clear Pricing Project. It was a potential way of holding those state, those hospital systems accountable. Ultimately, it did not, it failed in part because those systems were so big, they said, we're not going for it, so your people who are on your state health plan are going to have to find somebody else. They're big. How do you hold them accountable?
Oh, definitely. I mean, here's why Treasurer Falwell failed with the Clear Pricing Plan. First, he's not in favor of expanding Medicaid. And so if you're not in favor of expanding health insurance to North Carolinians, and that's going to help a lot of rural hospitals in our state, you really can't have a conversation about the state health plan because there's so much uncompensated care in our health system. So if you don't start there, you don't have a very large audience. The second thing is, it was sort of a go-it-alone approach where we proposed this clear pricing plan. I like clear and transparent prices too, but healthcare involves stakeholders all across the state, particularly during a global pandemic. And it was a go-it-alone approach that didn't really have a lot of allies. In the end, 4 out of 126 hospitals signed up. And you're right, that's a failure. If you're a state employee who lives in an area that doesn't have one of those 4 hospitals, and the lion's share do, you wouldn't have a network to rely on in that case. What I want to do is sign a contract that's not just about price, and that's the clear pricing plan, but about healthcare outcomes. And Frank, the reason I think that they'll sign that deal is because the health systems are already signed, have already signed that deal with Medicare and Blue Cross Blue Shield. If we can get that deal and force these health systems to be accountable for quality the way they already are with all the other payers, we can move forward in North Carolina. So it's not an abstract concept here like Falwell's clear pricing plan. I actually want to reinforce a plan that's already signed with lots of other insurers. I think that's going to get us great savings and, importantly, better healthcare outcomes.
Yeah, but why? Let me ask you this, though. Why would they want to sign it with you and, again, be locked into another agreement like that that restricts them? They've got some leeway with the state. Why would they want to lock themselves in when they've got that kind of market power?
Because I think the providers actually want to provide quality health care to people who come into their offices or health systems. And I think that actually you can pay great providers more when they deliver great health care. Think about the primary care physician that does a fantastic job keeping their patients healthy. That PCP should be able to get paid more if that patient doesn't have to go to the hospital. And if we can design contracts that pay primary care physicians or behavioral health specialists more if their patients don't incur further medical costs, I think that's a deal a lot of providers would take. And that's actually what a lot of health systems in North Carolina have already done, and I think they will with the state health plan. It's the difference between doubling down on the old model without Medicaid expansion versus pushing for Medicaid expansion and asking them to be accountable on price and value. Like I say, I think I'm much more optimistic we can get that deal done than the failure of the clear pricing plan.
Let's talk about COVID-19 and its impact. Currently, a long-term budgeting challenge. Obviously, it's going to continue to have an effect on the Treasury administration. How are you going to ensure that the state doesn't incur a deficit? And how would you handle the pandemic's ongoing and long-term expense to the state?
First of all, as leaders, we all need to model good behavior when it comes to the preventative measures that we know can help with COVID, whether it comes to wearing masks or social distancing. Every leader in the state, particularly the Council of State, which the state treasurer sits on, needs to model that behavior. The second thing is our health systems and providers have taken a huge hit because of COVID-19. Elective surgeries went down, ER volumes went down, and that's a financial hole that is no fault of their own, and we have to work together with our health systems and our providers to make sure that they're solvent, particularly in rural areas where people depend on these health systems as their only access point to care. That means we need to negotiate ways that we're going to pay that can be according with healthcare outcomes. It also means looking at things like advance payments if we need to support our health systems. Finally, Frank, the other thing I think isn't getting talked enough is the impact of COVID on mental health. I think we need to make new investments in the state health plan around the state to help people cope with the mental and behavioral issues that have come up since COVID-19. That's something I'd like to put on the agenda as our state treasurer.
Ronnie, let's talk about the big issue in my life, the state's pension plan.
Sure.
Because I'm going to be gone here pretty soon, and depending on that. But very seriously, the future of the state pension is something that people obviously consider very closely in this election. What are some of the things that voters should consider about retirement and pension when they're choosing a candidate for treasurer?
Well, thank you. And Frank, you got a long way to go, so don't worry yet. But I want that defined benefit pension to be there for you and for everyone else who works for the state of North Carolina. Defined benefit is one of the reasons that my folks were able to build a life for us. And it's so important to so many families in North Carolina. Right now, the funding ratio for our pension fund has been going down consistently over the last 3.5 years. And one of the reasons for that is our investment strategy isn't actually aligned with what the policy office is.
Going to interrupt you for just a minute. I want to know what a funding ratio is.
Sure. This explains what the percentage of our assets and how that compares to liabilities that we owe and how much we're going to have to pay out over years and years of people retiring. So we don't have as much money as we would have to pay out those liabilities over time, which puts us in a weaker position. So one way to think about it is the pension fund needs to pay out pension checks each and every year. But we're not just thinking about next year and the year after. We have to make sure we have the funds to pay these out 20 and 30 years from now when folks like me retire. And so what I'd like to do in the pension fund is actually have an investment strategy and stick to it. Right now, Frank, there's no permanent chief investment officer in the office to make sure we're managing this according to best practices. Our asset allocation, which means how much money we have in different investments, stocks, bonds, real estate, is completely out of whack. And we've lost about $3 billion because we aren't following our policy. What I'd like to do is hire a permanent chief investment officer, bring back and reinforce a better team. A lot of people have left under the current treasurer, and get us back to a place where we can recoup some of that lost value and make sure the pensions are there, not just for you, not just for me, but the new school teacher who's starting this year during the pandemic.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the other issues around this, or maybe the non-issues, but some of the important features or interesting features of this race. If elected, you would become the first Indian American to be elected to statewide office in North Carolina. Talk about the significance of that to you and voters and supporters.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I would be the first Asian American person ever elected statewide in North Carolina. That gives me a lot of pride, but more importantly, I hope that voters choose me because I have the right background for the job. I'm a PhD. I'm an economist by training. I worked for President Obama in the White House. Those are the credentials that I think people are hopefully going to choose me on November 3rd. Being the first Asian American elected statewide, that would mean that a lot of other folks would be looking to me as a model for their careers in politics and policy. And what I can promise to do is just spend time mentoring people who are interested in politics and policy. Frank, as you know, I'm not a likely candidate. You know, my last name probably has 13 letters. I'm a Duke professor. I know it's not basketball season, right? But I'm a Duke professor, never run for office. But if I can win this office and put someone different in the statewide level of North Carolina, I think it will inspire other people to get involved. And I want to help those folks and give them the mentorship that I got from so many folks. And I'm really proud to represent the Asian American community in an election where we have a vice presidential candidate, Kamala Harris, whose mother is of Indian descent. It's really exciting to be connected to the national race in so many ways here in North Carolina.
You know, again, I want to talk a little bit more about some of the responsibilities that the treasurer has. And again, these battle of the titans in some ways. We talked about it when it comes to medical care and medical insurance. And we were just talking about the state pension fund. You've talked about or said that the treasurer should play a greater role in trying to regulate corporations, given the amount of economic power that we have. Talk a little bit about that.
Sure. I mean, we have $100 billion in assets. Having $100 billion is like having 100 billion votes on the future of the economy and who it works for. And so as an investor in the world's largest companies, you have a voice as a state treasurer who happens to be a sole trustee. We're only one of and only four states with that kind of power. And when you call, the board of directors and the CEO picks up. So whether it's about the risks of climate change, which I believe to be significant for our pension portfolio, whether it's about diversity and inclusion in the boardroom, which I think is another important goal for companies, or whether it's about workers' rights and the representation on boards of directors, a state treasurer of North Carolina could be a tremendous advocate for those policies. because it's good for our investments. And I hope I can do that in a way that can maximize the value of North Carolina's returns for our pensions. We haven't used that voice very often recently, but I will if I'm elected as state treasurer.
Isn't there some chance of compromise in terms of the payout? You talked about making sure that that money is there 30 years down the line, that your investments are sound. If you start making judgments about the moral values of a company, do you risk the... Are you in any way compromising your fiduciary responsibility?
No. In fact, there's decades of research pointing in the opposite direction, some of which I've contributed to. I wrote a book called Can Business Save the Earth with my co-author, Michael Lennox, on this topic. Here's the way to think about it. Climate change, for example, which was just denoted by a Trump administration panel as a systemic risk to the financial system. If we ignore climate change, that's a political decision. If we incorporate a risk from climate change, which we know is real, onto our financial system and think about how we can invest for a low carbon future, that's going to protect money in the pension. People like my folks are not going to have their money in stranded assets or in companies that have penalties and fines. Ignoring climate change is the political decision. Incorporating the climate change risks, which everyone from the military to faith-based institutions is doing for their endowments, is the responsible thing for a fiduciary to do, and I intend to do that as state treasurer.
Ronnie Chatterjee, Democratic candidate for North Carolina treasurer, a professor at Duke University's Fuqua School of Business and Sanford School of Public Policy, facing off with incumbent state treasurer Dale Falwell. We spoke with Dale last week. We have links to that conversation and this one at our website, stateofthings.org. Ronnie, thanks for talking with us.
Thank you for having me, Frank.
And thank you for listening to The State of Things, produced by Anita Rao, Amanda Magnus, Grant Hall of Mormon, Kaya Finlay, and Stacia Brown. Jenny Lawson, our technical director, Al Wodarski also helped engineer today's show. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stacia.